Recently, the Publius National Post wrote about Hamas, how Hamas seeks to destroy Western civilization. But what exactly is Western civilization? They said, quote, "Western civilization is generally regarded as the child of Athens, Jerusalem, and Rome. That is, in the West, our philosophical and political thought is derived from that of the ancient Greeks. Our Christian religion comes from the Jewish religion, and both of these came to us via the Roman Empire and the civilization and culture it created," end quote. Robert Spencer, a frequent guest on this program, runs the website jihadwatch.org. He's a New York Times bestselling author, especially on subjects dealing with Islam. However, recently he's written a new book entitled Empire of God, How the Byzantines Saved Civilization. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point, and we welcome back Robert Spencer to the program. Robert, it's always a pleasure to talk with you.
Good to talk to you, Jerry. Thank you.
Sure. So, who are the Byzantines? Many people might want to ask.
Yeah. The Byzantines are the Roman Empire, essentially, the same Romans who we know of from Julius Caesar and Mark Antony. The empire was so large in the 3rd and 4th centuries that it actually was considered to be too much to govern by one person. And so there was a second emperor in Constantinople over to the east in the city that is now called Istanbul in Turkey. And then the Western Roman Empire that most people in America think of as the Roman Empire fell in 476, but the Roman Empire in the East, which is often called the Byzantine Empire or the Eastern Roman Empire, continued until 1453. And there was a great deal that we can learn from its stability, its longevity, and the reasons for those things.
And the Byzantine Empire professed to be Christian, correct? Tell us about that.
Yeah, absolutely. The Byzantine Empire was indeed a Christian empire, and that was one of the things that it bequeathed to the world, because really there is no form of Christianity that is existing today that does not owe a debt to the theological elaboration that took place during the Byzantine Empire, including the ideas of the divinity of Christ, the divine and human natures, the Trinity. All these things were formulated by theologians within the Byzantine Empire in the first ecumenical councils that are accepted by Catholics, Orthodox, and Protestant Christians to this day. Even if the substance of the councils is not accepted, the teachings of them are, except among a small minority. And so the influence that the Byzantine Empire has had upon Christianity and its development is often overlooked. And I think we would be enriched by rectifying that.
That's interesting. Just the other day in church, we led people in the Nicene Creed, which goes back to 325 AD. But it's my understanding that Nicaea was just a suburb of Constantinople. And so this is the kind of thing you're talking about, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And as a matter of fact, the Council of Nicaea, from which that comes, the creed, is one of the first manifestations of the Byzantine Empire as a Christian empire, because it was the conversion of the Emperor Constantine that led him to think that in the first place, he wanted to make the core of the unity of his empire to be a shared Christian faith. But in order to do that, he had to have a clear understanding that he could present of what exactly the Christian faith taught. And so if he thought that it was incumbent upon him as the Christian emperor to clarify or to be the cause for the clarification of the theological issues that were disputed among Christians at that time. And so it was from that, that it was for those reasons that he called the Nicene Council, and that we get the Nicene Creed that is still recited of in churches of all denominations, or virtually all.
Okay, so why do you say that the Byzantines saved civilization? And I'm sure that Islam is a part of this equation.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one reason, but not the only reason, that the Byzantines stood between Europe and the Muslims for 800 years and fought off numerous jihads. The Arabs first besieged Constantinople in 675, and then they finally conquered it in 1453. And so that's nearly 800 years that the Byzantine Empire stood between Europe and Islam. And it was during that period that Western civilization really develops. And the ideas that are derived from Christianity of the dignity of the human person, and from that, the equality of rights of all people before the law, and so very much more, were developed in the Byzantine Empire and in Western Europe, but would not have developed in either place if the Muslims had prevailed and Europe had become just another outpost of Islam. Then it would look like Syria today at best, and we would never even be having this conversation, because the bases for it would never have come to fruition.
The collapse of Byzantium, that would be 1453, right? The overthrow of Constantinople, correct?
Yes.
And that was a very bloody thing, too, as I understand it, that the Muslims showed no mercy. I remember reading about this in a book by George Grant, when they just threw into the sea all kinds of, you know, incredible treasures and so forth. But was there a link between the fall of Constantinople and things that later developed in the West pretty soon after, like the Renaissance and maybe even the Reformation in some ways? You know, some of the philosophy, basically going from Byzantium to Western Europe.
Yes, there was a more or less direct connection that actually started before the fall of the Byzantine Empire, when in 1439 there was an attempt to reunite what are known today as the Roman Catholic and the Greek Orthodox churches. And there was an ecumenical council, or what the Roman Catholics thought of as an ecumenical council, in Florence, in Italy. And so the ecumenical patriarch of Constantinople, who was the leader of the Orthodox Church and many bishops, and the emperor himself, traveled to Florence for this council. And the emperor asked his friend Gemistos Plathon to go along. Gemistos Plathon was a philosopher, not a theologian. He was a scholar of Plato, and he went along because the emperor asked him to, but he didn't have any part in the ecumenical council. It was not something that was even within his sphere of competence, but he took the time while he was in Florence to give lectures on the writings of Plato and Aristotle and so on. And at that time, there were only two books of Plato that were known in the West. And so Gemistos was able to introduce massive crowds that came to hear him in Italy to the works of Plato, and by extension to the ancient Greek philosophy in general. And this became the spark for the Renaissance in Italy. And then, of course, this spread all over Europe. Also, when the empire fell, not long after this, in 1453, many of those scholars went to Western Europe rather than live in the Ottoman Empire. And it was there that they also began to spread the works of the ancient Greek pre-Christian philosophers and thinkers who became the basis for the Western philosophical tradition, and lent a great deal also to the development of philosophy within the Christian tradition as well.
How did this book come about? I mean, I've talked to you, and I really appreciate your scholarship and your clarion call on this important issue. I mean, look, let's face it. The jihadists want to take over the world. They want to impose Sharia on the rest of us. And if you voluntarily and willingly submit, fine. Then you're a Muslim. You become a Muslim and everything's fine. But if you don't submit, then, we could do bad things to you and, to force you to submit. But how did you shift over Or maybe it wasn't such a shift since, you know, as you say, the Byzantium has been holding the bag for about 800 years, protecting the West from, you know, at least some parts of the Islamic invasions.
Well, yes, exactly. I think that it wasn't really all that much of a switch. It's just looking at the situation from a different angle. I wrote a book in 2018 called The History of Jihad, which has a great deal to do with the Byzantine Empire, but primarily in terms of its defense against the jihadis. And so I thought, having done that, my interest in the Roman Empire of this period was even greater than it had been, and I wanted to explore it from a positive angle rather than simply on the basis of looking at their self-defense. And so that's essentially why I looked into this book. Also, I am a human being from that part of the world. My grandparents were exiled from the Ottoman Empire, and so they were Greek Christians from way back. Their ancestors lived in the Byzantine Empire, and so I consider it a kind of an homage to my own family to have done this.
What is Hagia Sophia, and could the day ever come when that becomes a church again?
Well, nothing's impossible in this world. You never know what might happen. History is full of strange twists and turns, but it certainly doesn't look as if that's on the horizon. Hagia Sophia was the grandest church in terms of architecture in the world for the Orthodox Christian tradition. The architecture of the church is very important. They don't share the view that one can just worship anywhere. I mean, obviously one can worship anywhere in any building, but the worship and one's experience of the divine is enhanced by one's surroundings if they are designed to make one mindful of Christ and of the circumstances of our salvation. And so Hagia Sophia was built with that in mind. It was the grandest, most beautiful, most stirring cathedral in the Christian world for 1,000 years. It was bloodily taken on May 29th, 1453, when the Muslims finally did conquer the empire and break into Constantinople. There were many people taking refuge inside the cathedral. They were brutally murdered. Many were enslaved and so on. The cathedral was turned into a mosque and continued as a mosque until 1935, when the secular Turkish government made it a museum. And then in 2020, the president of Turkey, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, made it into a mosque again. And so it is still one of the architectural marvels of the world. It's the model for all, pretty much all other Orthodox churches, as well as for mosques, with the dome ceiling representing the heavens and the earth beneath and so on. And it is still there in Constantinople, although, as I say, it's now a mosque.
Okay, we have about 40 seconds left. Whatever you want to bring out, please, you know, talk about that in terms of how the Byzantines saved civilization.
Well, like I say, it was the preservation of the Greek philosophy as well as the clarification of Christian theology that are the major things that the Byzantines gave to the world. They also gave a great deal in terms of the legal tradition, influencing John Adams and Thomas Jefferson. And primarily, they held off the Muslims for all those centuries, allowing for the development of Western Europe. And so we need to revisit them and realize what they have given to us. It's our ignorance of history to a tremendous degree these days that leads us into many errors and difficulties.
All right. Very, very good point. Robert Spencer, jihadwatch.org, for more information. Thank you, Robert. All the best.
Thank you.